We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If I ventured in the slipstream.
This episode of Inside Golf Podcast is brought to you by Run Pure Sports. You can sign up today using code ANTI for 15% off. This is where all of my in-depth articles can be found on the given week. This is where the Discord is. We are an active golf community talking golf betting, golf DFS 24/7. That is the best place to reach me for questions, ownership projections, tools, premium shows. We've been fooling around with a Wednesday evening premium one with me and Kobe, which is a ton of fun last week. We'll probably be bringing that back. And it's just a great place to talk golf and hang. So you can head on over to runpuresports.com, code ANTI for 15% off. We have that golf only option as well, although we are firing on all major sports. We've got NBA kind of getting into the end of the NBA season, NBA playoffs on the horizon as well. So if you want to sign up for all sports, you can get the value and all of that. Play some MMA, NASCAR, NBA. I know MLB season is right around the corner as well. Or if you're just a tried and true golf guy, which I imagine many are, just if you're consuming this podcast, we have a golf-only option for the golf hardos out there. So runpuresports.com, promo code ANTI for 15% off. That is the discount code to get you that coupon on that. Okay, coming up on this podcast, bringing on Bob Herrig, an interview that I'm very excited about because he has a new Tiger Woods book coming out. You can pre-order Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods on Amazon right now. It comes out on March 26th. So we talk a lot about his new Tiger Woods book. We also talk state of pro golf, Anthony Kim's return, Bay Hill. He's going to Bay Hill this week and going to the Players as well. So we talk a little bit about State of the Union in terms of where we're at now, 4 weeks away, 4 or 5 weeks away from the Masters. So jam-packed episode. We cover a lot of ground in here, and we hope you enjoy it as much as we did. So without further ado, let's bring on Bob. All right, Bob Herrig is here, Sports Illustrated, author of a new Tiger Woods book, which we're going to talk about a lot as well. And this feels like such a great time to have a big State of the Union on what's going on in the professional golf landscape right now. So welcome in. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Andy. Appreciate it. Glad to.
I actually want to start with Anthony Kim because, you know, and absolutely no shots. We're recording this on Monday afternoon, a couple hours after the Cognizant Classic just finished up. So no shots to Austin Eckroat or Capital One's the match. But to me, Anthony Kim returning to professional golf was still the biggest story of the week, in my opinion. Just to give some quick context, he made his debut on the LIV Tour at LIV Jeddah as a wild card. He shot 76, 76, 74. He finished in last by 11 strokes. I know it was on at a weird time of the evening, Bob, but did you get a Did you get a chance to watch a lot of his performance? What were some of your takeaways?
Yeah, I guess I was not surprised that he struggled. I was surprised that he was so far behind everybody else. I just think I would have expected him to be a little bit sharper. I mean, look, he hasn't played for all this time. You know, we know all that. He hasn't competed in a long time. There should have been no expectations that he finished anywhere but last. But yet the fact that he only had one score out of three that was as good as anybody else in the field, it makes me think like, well, how much has he been working at this? And if you haven't put in the time yet, why would you come back now? Like, why not, you know, give it a few more weeks or another month or 6 weeks or whatever, just to get that much more sharp? Because obviously playing in tournaments is not easy, especially for someone who hasn't done it for so long. So, but there's so many questions still. You know, we don't know anything about what's going on for the last 12 years. We have all this mystery surrounding an insurance policy. You know, how badly was he injured? Was he not allowed to play golf? How long did he put the clubs away? There's indications that he maybe went years without ever touching a club.
I can definitely confirm that.
But we don't know how long. We don't know how far away from it he got. We don't know if he's had any other physical issues besides the ones that hampered him towards the end way back in 2012. So I think these are all important things that, you know, at some point I'm guessing he's going to talk to somebody about.
Do you think, because I talked a little bit about Anthony Kim on the podcast I put out yesterday. And one of the things I was curious about was, what do you think Liv's end goal in this is? Because I think at a macro level, this makes a lot of sense to me if you're Liv, in the sense that, okay, you're going to get more eyeballs. This obviously created a lot of discourse over the weekend. A lot more people paid attention to what was going on at Jeddah than they probably would have if Anthony Kim was not in the field. Now, the flip side of that is that's probably going to wear thin in a couple events if he doesn't start playing better golf. And I think the other flip side of it that is a little conspicuous to me and curious in terms of why Liv did this is it feels a little antithetical to a lot of the things that you would think that they would be arguing for in terms of their legitimization in the sense of getting recognized by places like the OWGR. Like, doesn't that kind of contradict a little bit this idea of meritocracy and a lot of the arguments that you're making for being recognized as a legitimate golf tour when you're bringing these guys that haven't played competitive golf in a decade into your event and giving those spots over players that presumably would want to play on Liv and would be a little bit more deserving from a competitive standpoint?
There's no question they opened themselves up to some criticism for just those reasons. I mean, I do think on the one hand, it fits in perfectly with what they're trying to do.
Right. I agree.
You know, I mean, they have the avenue to do it. They don't really have rules per se as it pertains to who plays for them. Look, if you were to play in a PGA Tour event this past week, I've made this point to many people. The ones who there's a segment of people here out there who, no matter which side of this PGA Tour Live divide you are on, you are going to always criticize the other guy.
Yes.
And I find that to be extremely tiring.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the same people on the PGA Tour side who criticized Liv and Kim for playing on Liv would have been welcoming him if he had taken
arms.
A sponsor's exemption at the Cognizant Classic. Now, their argument is, well, yeah, but for him to stay out there, he would have needed to perform. True. Absolutely. There's no denying that. You know, he was only going to get limited sponsor invites. He was going to need to prove himself. He was going to need to do something to be able to get his card back. You know, he would have had some small status as a past champion.
Yeah.
Whereas on Liv, they've given him 11 events. So, but by the same token, if he were playing on the PGA Tour, the Liv people who support Liv and think it was great that he played would have been saying, oh my God, look out there. Look at how desperate they are. They got to bring this guy who's back, who hasn't played for 12 years. He can't even play. He can't even break 80, all these things. So,
or can you imagine if he happened to play well, and how furious they would be if he played well randomly on a sponsored exception and started passing more lift players into OWGR?
Well, sure. I mean, there's all sorts, both sides of this. Like, again, I'm not knocking either side. I'm knocking them both.
Yeah.
It's like, step back from it. It's a guy that before LIV, if he would have come back, there would have been immense interest. So he chose to come back on LIV. Okay. And as far as LIV doing it for those reasons you said, you're right. They opened themselves up to some criticism. They've been trying to prove their legitimacy. They've been making the pitch that they deserve OWGR points. But one of the factors that has hurt them in that quest is the fact that they have a set field with no ability to play your way into it from week to week. And that hurts them in terms of OWGR. Whether you agree with that or not, that is the reasons they've given, OWGR has given. They also, you know, player pathways. You know, there's guys who went to that Q school who fell short and didn't get in, and then they just give a spot to Anthony Kim for 11 tournaments. You know, not just one, 11. They've signed him on for the rest of the year, which I was surprised at. I thought he was going to get 3 to 5 starts, and then they were going to assess. And that these wild card spots were supposed to turn over a little bit. They're not. So, look, from just a golf fan perspective, I find it very fascinating to see what he's able to do. But, of course, it opened up the doors to all kinds of criticism from both sides.
I still think if you're Lev, you do it. And I say that even keeping in mind all that I have said about how it contradicts some of their arguments for the OWGR, because, and I say that even knowing there's a lot of ambiguity on what the end result of this could be, because I'm sure you probably noticed this a little bit too, but even between rounds 1 and 2, the discourse was severely muted. Like after round 1, just logging on in Twitter in the morning, I mean, there's so many people that had opinions on how Anthony Kim played at round 1 when he shot the 76. A lot of people, I did not stay up on the West Coast. I'm in Los Angeles, but I actually know like a fair amount of people, both fans and my friends in the media that cover golf, that were like, I'm going to watch this. I'm going to stay up and watch this at ungodly hours of the night. I don't think after the 76 happened in round 1, a lot of those same people tuned in to round 2. And so if you project that out for a couple of tournaments, I don't know what this looks like for Liv if he continues to play very poorly. As you mentioned, he's locked into 11 more tournaments. So it seems to me like, I talked about this again on a little bit on my podcast, Anthony Kim, to hold people's attention, I think he either needs to play better, or the other route that you talked about, where maybe he is more of a ceremonial figure in this game, right? Like Tiger Woods, I think a lot of people will get to him later, view him more as a ceremonial golfer at this point. And if that's what Anthony Kim is in 2024, then I think all of us are still happy to have him back in the game. But I do think he either needs to like play better to hold people's attention, or go down the other route, as you mentioned, where he starts talking about what happened, and Liv is maybe able to use him as a bit of a vehicle, whether it's a bit more in the media landscape, or he does some longer sit down interviews with their podcast and Greg Norman. Like, I think there's a lot of avenues that Liv could take with this, whether he plays well or not.
There's no question. Part of it is going to have to be his story needs to be told.
Yes.
And how they do that is interesting. If they do it in-house only, I think that's probably not a great idea. Although, you know, maybe they can draw some attention to their social media. They have, they have an in-house podcast now. Yeah. Liv does, that Jerry Foltz does with Sue Ann Hang, and maybe that's the way. But I'm just not sure that would be the proper vehicle, Maybe a more widespread way to do it. But I do think if there's a story to be told and he's able to tell it, you know, look, there's not everything that people should have to say about their private lives. And I get that. But like, there is some basics, like, why did you not come back? What happened? How injured were you? Did you think about coming back even a year later, 2 years later? You don't have to tell us how much the insurance policy was unless you want to, but how much did that impact it? Did you think you were done forever? How many times were you tempted over the last few years to come back? How much did you think about playing in the PGA Tour? Did you have sponsors? There's so many golf-related things that I think, you know, the other day, I don't know if you noticed, he went to take a drop and he went to do it like this.
Yeah.
Like how much out of it has he been? That changed in 2019, that rule. You know, if he would have gone like this, I would have really been concerned because that was the way old way they did it. You know, but it's down from the knee now. Like, he didn't know the rule, how to drop. I mean, it's very possible that he is so far removed that he didn't even pay attention. And I think these things are all fascinating. Now, look, if he had personal issues, if he had health issues that he doesn't want to get into, you know, that's a hard road to go down and get somebody to open up about that. But we need to know something. And once that story gets told, I think then he has a chance to get even more interest. You know, if it just goes out and now he's playing in Hong Kong this week and he shoots in the 70s again and finishes last, it's going to start to get old. Then he's playing in the U.S., Miami tournament the week before the Masters. That's a great opportunity for Liv to lean into him. Also, frankly, it's an opportunity for them to lean into their major players. You know, they're going to be a week away from playing in the Masters. They've got the defending champion. They've got two guys who finished runner-up last year, all in their field. They've got the British Open champion. They've got a guy like Bryson who thinks he can win the Masters and majors. Joaquin Neiman, the hottest player in golf. They got all these storylines that they should be pushing. Frankly, if I were them, I would, for that 1 week, abandon the whole team push. Just go hard on your individuals, and because those guys are going to be big stories the following week as well.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And even I operate a lot more in the gambling and data space. And I think one of the mistakes that I made last year, particularly I was thinking about this as it pertained to Brooks at the PGA Championship at Oak Hill. Like, you may not like the product, you may not enjoy watching Liv, but before these major championships, you can gain a lot by just checking it, because they don't have traditional stats, which is a big detriment to everything mm-hmm. that I try and do in terms of the content I put out and making models and predictions. That makes my life a lot harder. So you kind of have to go with their non-traditional stats more and go with the eye test a little bit more. But at this point, if part of your job is talking about the major championships and making predictions at the major championships, you're probably going to learn more about the landscape going in of that major championship by watching Doral. I mean, that is just as valuable as anything that's happening this week at Bay Hill.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think form going in is important. I mean, now last year, I'm not sure I could have predicted that Brooks would contend at the Masters based on what he did the week before.
Right.
But he wasn't awful. The other thing is they're going to go in with five events under their belt this year as opposed to only three last year. Mm-hmm. I remember the talking point being, they were going to be under-golfed, you know, going into the Masters. This year, it's probably about right. They're on a big trip way overseas. Obviously, they get home after this week, and they've still got a couple of weeks then to recover before Miami. The guys who are going to the Masters are, you know, they're a quick flight away from Augusta, easy. In fact, I'm sure some of them will go to Augusta early in the Miami week to scout. So it's actually a good setup for them to be prepared for the Masters.
Now that you have me on the topic, I think we can switch gears from the Anthony Kim stuff, because you got me thinking about the Masters a little bit more. Who do you think should be favored right now? We're like 5 weeks out. I think you could pull Coles in the case of everybody, right? Scottie Scheffler, he's on a generational ball striking run. Nobody will dispute that, but there's serious questions about his putter. Mm-hmm. John Rahm, he, first of all, it's really hard to go back to back. There isn't a tremendous history of, I want to say, you probably know this better than me, the last two is like Tiger 1999, 2001 or 2001, 2000, 2001, and then Faldo 90, 91, I want to say, yeah. But it hasn't happened that often.
It's only happened three times.
It's only happened three times.
Jack, yeah. Faldo, and Tiger. And Tiger was 0-1, 0-2.
There you go.
So
there you go. You know, and just a big career switch for him as well. And then sure. The other guy that I would have thrown in there is Rory, which you could obviously poke a tremendous amount of holes in the Rory at the Masters in terms of the scar tissue that he's developed at that course as well.
Rory probably needs to go in under the radar if that's possible. I remember last year, you know, there was a lot of good thoughts around him and it just turned awful. He missed the cut. I think the fact that Rom won't be playing PGA Tour events might actually help him. You know, there's after this week, he's got one event left before the Masters. It'll be Miami. I'm not sure it'll have a huge media turnout. It certainly won't have the media turnout that he would have had if he were playing at the Players, which might have been the last event that he played before, or certainly this week at Bay Hill. These would have been 2 weeks where you would have expected him to play, and he would have had a lot of questions about the Masters. We're at that point. After this week in Hong Kong, only the event in Miami is really an opportunity for him to get a lot of media, and how much will be there, I'm not sure. So that's good for him. But then you've got, I think, Neiman, obviously, given the way he's playing and the motivation that he has right now and he seems to be like determined. I am going to make my mark in the majors this year. That's going to be a great story going in, I think. And like you mentioned, Scheffler, you're right. I mean, it's incredible to think we're going on a year since he's won. I know. As many chances as he's had, as how many times has he been up there? And he hasn't won in almost a year since the Players last year. You know, and let's be honest, on the PGA Tour this year, it's been a strange start with no stars virtually. I mean, Hideki and Wyndham Clark are past major champions who've won, but I don't, they were, you know, obviously they're great players, but they were not elite at the time that they won. And, you know, we've just not seen that this year. We keep having this run of guys that nobody's predicting is going to win who've been winning. So in a way that kind of makes the Masters all the more wide open.
We didn't even mention Brooks either. He's the other person that I would put in that for.
Well, and I would put Cam in there too. I would put Cam in there. You know, I certainly would put like Cantlay and Schauffele, you know, but again, these guys haven't been winning.
Hovland probably would.
Yep. Hovland, who's been quiet too. So far this year. Victor's been very quiet this year.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What do you make of that in terms of the more unheralded winners on the PGA Tour? Because that was another thing I had in my notes too to talk to you about. Because there's a lot of I think what's unfortunate, and you alluded to this already in the conversation, is that we view everything now in the context of, like, is this good for the PGA Tour in their battle versus LIV? Is this good for LIV in their battle for the PGA Tour? As opposed to just viewing it in the context of, like, is this good for golf fans, right? And I was thinking a lot about the more surprise winners this year on the PGA Tour, and I don't even want to make it a ratings thing or anything like that, but something has felt a little bit off organizational wise, narrative wise, juice wise. I've been to two tournaments this year. I don't know how many you've been to. I went to, cause I'm in LA. So I go to Torrey Pines and I go to Riviera every year. And I have been going to those tournaments for the past 5 years. And at each of those tournaments, something just felt like a little bit off. And like, even in the Torrey Pines media center, all the old school San Diego journalists were talking about, like, this used to be where Tiger debuted. Like, this was our week. This was our spot. Now you're telling me I got to write 800 words on something called Matthew Pavone. So I what have you made of this start to the PGA Tour season?
Well, I mean, you could look at it like, oh, all the best players are at LIV and it's weak in their fields. I think that's way, 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 way too simplistic. Because it doesn't necessarily mean that would have happened, that one of the Rahm or a Hatton or a Moronk would have won. You know, it does mean that there are more opportunities for some of these guys to come up and perform. But you know, golf is cyclical this way. There are times that throughout the game where we've gone through these stretches where nobody dominates, and where we have a lot of, you know, kind of one-off winners or guys you're not expecting. I mean, frankly, the game needs somebody to dominate. I've talked about this many times. I've written about it. It's not like team sports where we enjoy parity. You know, in the NFL, parity is what sells. Almost every team starts out the year with some hope because of the draft or the way the schedule works. You know, if you were a last place team last year, in theory, you had draft picks. You're going to have a weaker schedule. You have a chance to excel. In golf, we like it when somebody dominates. That's why Tiger was so popular. That's why Phil was so popular. They won a lot. And even if you didn't like them, you wanted to tune in to see if somebody could beat them, or you wanted to see if they could keep this streak going. That's why it was great last year when Rahm won four times early. You know, he won three times before the Masters. He went into the Masters with a lot of fanfare. It's interesting to me that he didn't win after that. Yeah. You know, didn't win another tournament the rest of the year to keep that going. You know, Scheffler a couple of years ago, the same thing. Victor at the end of last year, we sort of, you know, we jump on board with guys who get hot, and we don't have that right now. And so it hurts, you know, but I would also point out that even though we're only, what, 4 or 5 weeks away from the Masters, Florida has not necessarily been a place that portends you're going to win the Masters. You know, I think it's good to have form. I think it helps, you know, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, it's been a long time since somebody went and won the Masters after they won Bay Hill. In fact, I'm sure it was Tiger. You know, you're talking.
He's won Bay Hill eight times, I think. So that would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, like, so, you know, like Tiger might have even been the last one who won the Players in March and then won the Masters. It just doesn't happen very often. So, but yet this is a sort of time where we look to start seeing some trends and if guys have any form.
Well, that's why I think a lot of us missed the boat on the Brooks Masters thing last year, because I think part of the reason why Florida may not be the best indicator of success at the Masters necessarily is because, you know, you're making the switch from grainy Bermuda to firm bank grass, right? They're just such, I mean, Bay Hill, TPC Sawgrass are such different golf courses than Augusta, both in the questions that they're asking agronomically as well, weather too. But there has been at the Masters, it does feel like at least the last 2 years, Hideki broke this mold and he broke the mold and broke a lot of trends in a lot of ways. It does seem like the guy who is playing the best, I have had to tell myself over and over again the last couple of years, like, don't overthink this one. It has a right. lot of times been the guy that is just coming in with the best form. As you mentioned, Scheffler was on a massive tear right before he won the Masters. Rahm was on a massive tear too. Yep. And then he actually threw a couple people off his scent by not being good in Florida and right. was actually dropped in the odds behind Scotty and Rory and ended up then winning Augusta, which fell in line more so with his beginning of the season where he won three times.
Rahm actually was interesting. I remember, you know, he had been on that incredible run. And when he got to Bay Hill, he finally like fell off. He had yeah. like kind of a bad Saturday. He might've finished 30th or something.
He was first round leader actually. Yeah. And then he really fell off on Friday and Saturday.
And then he withdrew from the Players due to illness.
Yep.
And he played the match play, but I don't think he made it to this final 16. And so, you know, it was just sort of like, okay, like he wasn't as hot anymore. And maybe that helped him, you know, like, cause he was able to probably go home and regroup a little bit. It's just what we're finding in golf now too, is I just think it's hard to make. Tiger spoiled us way back in the day. Like, guys do not maintain hot runs for 6, 8 weeks, 2 months. They get on a roll for a few weeks and then they taper off.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't think anybody would want to not win now because they're afraid that means that they won't win next month. But there is something to be said for sort of peaking at the right time. And that's a tough one to navigate in golf.
That's why the Rory thing is so interesting to me, Bob, because it seems like it feels like every single year at the Masters, Rory is tweaking something in his prep. But this year, he's going Cognizant, API, Players, I think taking a break for the Valspar, and then he may end up withdrawing for this, but I believe he said he was going to play the Valero Texas Open the week before the Masters.
Right.
So we're going to see Rory four times in the 6 weeks leading up to the Masters. And I would imagine for all of the other best players on the PGA Tour, your Schefflers, your Hovlands, your Xanders, your Cantleys, your Ludwigs, the last time we see them before the Masters is going to be the Players, I would presume.
Yeah. And I, you know, in Rory's case, I he did say earlier that he planned to play a lot going into the Masters this year, and that he seems to kind of change his approach from year to year. I'm very curious when we get a chance to ask him, is he going to go to Augusta in advance?
Yeah.
You know, he did that last year and got really comfortable and it didn't work. You know, there's something to be said for the golf course never plays the same early on. But some guys like to go there early and get some of the coursework done so that during the practice rounds, they can take it casual because those are stressful days. Maybe those days leading up weren't stressful enough for them. You know, I mean, who knows what the proper thing is. I think it's good for him playing the week before. That has helped him before. And, you know, he doesn't get there too early. That means he shows up on Monday. You hope that there's no bad weather in Texas. Get there Monday, you do your media thing Tuesday, you know, and all of a sudden, boom, it's almost Thursday. And maybe there's less thinking going on. He certainly knows the golf course. He's been around it a zillion times now. And just go play, you know. It sure would be fun to have him in the mix on the back nine, because that's the other thing. Since he had his best chance, which was 2011 when he had a third round lead, he still had the lead with 9 holes to go. He's really not been there on the back nine. I mean, no. A couple of years ago, he shot 64 on the final day.
Wasn't
but he was way out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and the year that Patrick Reed won, he was in the last group and he had the chance to close it to one with an eagle on the second hole. And he missed a short 3 or 4 footer and he was never the same. You know, and he was really not in it on the back nine. So Rory has, you know, he's not really been in the heat of it on the back nine on Sunday. And, you know, there's something to be said for you got to put yourself there too. And he's really just not been able to do that.
So I'm so curious. I can't make up what I want to see. And I'm curious to ask you too. This will be my last Bay Hill question. Then we'll talk some Tiger. But part of me is like, okay, I don't really want Rory to blow his load early this year. Kind of like you said, maybe going in a little bit under the radar would be his benefit versus if he just blows the doors off at Bay Hill, a golf course that he's won at in the past and fits his game statistically incredibly well. The players, I think he has a bit less so of an advantage in terms of his skill set. And it's not as much of a driver heavy long irons course that right. you can bludgeon like Bay Hill, but he still won at TPC Sawgrass before and had a bunch of success there too. You're going to Bay Hill tomorrow, I believe. Right. And what, cause it's you're in Florida right now. It's a bit of a drive for you, but what are you most interested and curious to see at Bay Hill? Like, what are you watching for this week the most?
To be honest, it's something sort of what we were talking about earlier for some of the stars to emerge.
Yeah.
You know, they've just not done it this year. This has been a year of stories and not stars. You know, there have been good stories. Obviously, having an amateur win on the PGA Tour is a really good story. You know, a guy, Pavon, you know, DP World Tour player winning in only his third or fourth PGA Tour start. That's a good story. But we're not having the... You know, Grayson Murray coming out of nowhere to win, but we aren't having the stars shine. And I think we need that. I think golf kind of needs that. We could use a good Sunday, you know, Rory and Scheffler and maybe Cantlay or Ricky and, you know, Victor, some of these guys up there. That's what these signature events were designed to be. And we've not really had that. And so I think that's what I'm looking for. Is anybody going to step up and do that? And this is a place where, you know, it's not an easy golf course. The guys who are the stars have played it a number of times. Be interesting to see if they step up.
All right. Now the stuff I'm even more excited to talk to you about. Okay. So you have a book coming out in a couple of weeks, March 26, I want to say. Is that correct? March 26. Yep. You can pre-order it on Amazon right now. It's called... Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. This is the second book you've written on Tiger Woods. The first book was in the context of his rivalry with Phil Mickelson. So this one features a little bit of a different lens, I would presume. You're taking more of a magnifying glass closer in on Tiger's career trajectory and, you know, the impact that he's had on the larger golf ecosystem. Talk to me a little bit about why you decided to dive back into the Tiger story and how this book came to be.
Well, the original intent was to do a deep dive on his 2019 Masters win. And I originally had planned to do that.
I would have very much welcomed that if you want to write that someday too.
Well, I mean, a lot of this book is about that. It's really kind of, it's sort of pegged to the 5-year anniversary. The 19 Masters win is a big part of this book, but I expanded it beyond because as I was sort of researching the idea, you know, it just occurred to me that, you know, the comeback that Tiger had to win that Masters sort of epitomized his entire career. You know, we think about the wins, the majors, 82 wins, 15 majors, the immense skill, all the great things that he's accomplished, all the records. But how did he do that? It wasn't just because he showed up. It was because he had this amazing, you know, frankly, drive. The title of the book, Resiliency, Never Quit, Drive. And there's numerous examples in his career where, you know, he could have taken the easy way out and just, you know, not cared. I examined the cut streak, 142 in a row. He didn't miss a cut for 7 years. You know, and I've heard, and people will say, well, you know, how many of those events were no cut events? Fair. Same guys who are trying to set that record also have no cut events. Nobody has got
more within, of them. Yeah.
You know, I mean, nobody has even come with halfway to 142 in Tiger's era. In fact, I don't think anybody's gotten beyond like 50 or 52. Steve Stricker and Adam Scott had long streaks that ended around 50. Tiger's 142. I mean, he broke a record that was held by Byron Nelson of 113 that he set, like, you know, way back in the 1940s when golf was a lot different.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just one example of how, and, you know, I researched it and talked to people about, you know, what it takes to never miss a cut. I mean, you know, there are Fridays when these guys know they're not playing well. Maybe something's bothering them. They're tired. They've been on the road too long. They think, you know what? It'll do me some good to miss a cut. I'm going to get out of here. I'll go home, regroup, and work on my game. Now, Tiger never thought that way. He always, you know, had this goal of making the cut, and he, so many times he did it. And even to this day, like, you know, he's missed, off the top of my head, I believe he's missed 24 cuts worldwide in his career. That's less than Justin Thomas. That's less than Jordan Spieth. He's got 12, 15 years of tournaments on those guys, and they've missed more than him. You know, Phil, for all his greatness, missed like 90 some cuts in his career. It's normal to miss cuts. It's not anything negative. It happens, but Tiger never missed them. And that's just one example. Obviously the comeback from back surgery to win the Masters, the comeback to even playing the Masters the last couple of years. I get into all that stuff. That's sort of how the book started, with the Masters, and it grew into something a little bit bigger. His legacy being, he's had an incredible drive to put together the record that he has.
When you dove back into that 2019 Masters, was there anything that, looking back on it now, after we've got some separation from it, and I've made this argument when it comes to Phil's PGA win at Kiawah in 2021, like, those are just two events that I actually don't think we talk about enough. especially with the Phil thing, like, he just completely torpedoed his entire golf reputation somewhat shortly after that happened. And as a result, we rarely talk about what is one of the top two golfing major achievements, in my opinion, of like the last 50 years, Tiger's 2019 Masters being the other one. But what was it like diving back in to that 2019 Masters, now having a little bit of separation from it?
Well, I think there's two things. One is the back surgery itself. I did a lot of research on that, and I talked to some people who've had a spinal fusion. I talked to his trainer, who, you know, very carefully danced around privacy issues to, you know, give me a sense of what Tiger was going through and how it came about. You know, he sort of clandestinely left the Champions dinner on the Tuesday night of the 2017 Masters and flew to London to meet with consultants because he was in such pain and he was looking for relief and he needed something to get through this. And it had nothing really to do with golf. It had to do with quality of life. And his trainer knew that, you know, finding the right doctor for Tiger was it going to be a challenge, because of course you could call up any doctor and operate on Tiger Woods. Everybody would, you know, he wouldn't have had any trouble finding a doctor, but it was finding the right one. And so they met with these consultants in London for a couple of days. You know, his trainer learned exactly how dire the situation was, that there was virtually nothing around the disc in his lower spine. That's why he was having so much pain. And they immediately settled on a surgeon in Dallas named Dr. Richard Geyer, who helped found a back disc institute. And, you know, I called his partner, who basically said, you know, he'd done thousands of these. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I said, well, how common is this? He goes, well, look, we try to get you to not do it. You know, we try to find other ways for people to, you know, but for someone like Tiger, he was in such bad shape and, you know, every other option was considered. So, you know, to think that Tiger within 2 years of that was winning the Masters is really remarkable. Forget about his age. Forget about the fact that he hadn't won a major in 11 years. All those things. On top of that, he came back from this major surgery that could have ended his career, that was meant for quality of life issues. And then, oh, by the way, he had to beat Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Xander Schauffele was in the mix, Bubba was up there, Webb Simpson was up there, Francisco Molinari, who played with him the last day,
has just playing beat amazing. Him. Yeah, Cantlay was up there. Yeah.
You know, Molinari had won Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer, a month earlier and shot 65 in the last round. He was on a year-long tear. He had won the Open the year before, playing with Tiger in the last group when Tiger briefly took the lead on Sunday at Carnoustie, but Molinari rallied to win. And you know, all of that. Tiger handled all of that. And for the first time in his major career, he came back. He was not leading after 54 holes. He was actually two behind, 43 years old, second oldest Masters champion behind Jack. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot there that when, like you said, we don't maybe give it enough credit. I'm thinking that it's going to be revisited a little bit this year. I mean, it's been a weird time since 2019.
Yeah.
You know, 2020 was the COVID year. Tiger didn't get a proper, I didn't think, a proper shot at defending. It was a weird year. There was nobody there. It was in November. He wasn't particularly healthy. Obviously, 2021, that was not far after the car crash. 2022, you know, he could barely walk. Last year, he withdrew. You know, this might be the first time since he won in 2019 where he actually feels pretty good, you know, all things considered. That doesn't mean he's going to win, but, you know, I'm curious to see if he plays at the Players next week and what kind of form he shows, because if he has any kind of a decent week at the Players, it's going to raise up expectations and give him a little bit of confidence.
I was going to ask that next, because first of all, do you think he's going to play at the Players? Because in my opinion, for this version of Tiger Woods, the golfer that he is today in 2024, I actually think TPC Sawgrass is like an okay golf course for him. It's pretty flat. It's a pretty technical thinking man's golf course. Like, there's a fair amount of strategy required. It's a golf course where you have to stay out of trouble and make smart decisions and avoid big numbers. Again, I wouldn't place many high expectations on him to contend or win, but comparatively speaking, like, I'd much rather see him play TPC Sawgrass than attempt to, you know, hack four irons out of 3-inch rough at Bay Hill.
I agree completely. Sawgrass isn't big on rough.
No,
especially this time of year. It's a placement golf course. You know, it's been criticized as being target golf, but I actually think right now that's good for Tiger.
Yeah.
Tiger does not overpower golf courses anymore like he used to. And I think sometimes he forgets that. That's not to say Tiger can't get it out there. He certainly does. You know, I saw him at Riviera for the short time he was there. I watched him in the practice round. I watched him in the pro-am. And Tiger hit plenty of good tee shots, plenty of good drives. He can get it out there still. But I think it'll be good for him to play a course where he doesn't have to hit driver on every hole, where he can maybe lay up with irons or a five wood, where he can place it, where he can, you know, be thinking more in terms of hitting sharp iron shots, which is still his forte. And as you said, it's a flat course mostly. It's not a strenuous walk. It shouldn't be cold. It could be, but it shouldn't be. Cold weather doesn't help him either. That's the other thing that's killed Tiger the last 2 years of the Masters is, of all things, you know, he's just run into really bad weather. Tiger needs it to be warm. You know, he needs it to be in the 70s. He needs it to be no worse than the 60s in the mornings, because he's stiff. It's hard to get limber. It's hard to get loose. It hurts when it's cold out. And so that would help him too if he had some good weather. And I just think kind of the shot making that's required at the Players, it was always a little bit of a mystery to me back in the day why Tiger didn't perform better there, because obviously he could play well on any course. Yeah, I think it got in his head a little bit. He didn't like it because he couldn't hit driver all the time. But yet he won that tournament in 2013 playing really, really well. And in 2019 and 2018, when he played the last times, he actually had pretty good tournaments. Not great, but good. He had a decent week at the Players, you know, a month or so before he won the Masters. And look, if he doesn't play, that's not a good sign, I don't think. I think that Tiger knows that he can't just show up at the Masters and have played, what, 24 holes of golf?
Yeah.
That's not going to be good for him. So, you know, I'm expecting that we're going to find out that he's going to play there, and then it'll be interesting to see how he handles it.
What do you think at this stage of his career are fair? I mean, you could probably speak way more to this than me from all of the research that you've done in your book. I'm really curious your perspective on this. But do you think at this stage of his career, like, what do you think Tiger's goal is competitively? Like, where do you think he's at competitively at this stage of his career?
You know, I just don't get the sense that his goal is anything less than winning.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now he might not show up at the Players' Championship and in the back of his mind say that or think that. He might have a more modest goal. But I think ultimately in the back of his mind, he's trying to position himself so that he can win. Now, when would that be? It's a shame that he hasn't been able to build up a little bit more. I think that that's so important. And this is actually, you know, I talk about this in the book a little bit as I'm looking to the future. I actually, in a weird way, think when he turns 50, if he's still competitive, if he still wants to play, if he doesn't have any more setbacks, in other words, let's say his right leg can get a little bit better, not worse, but better, you know, to where he can walk 72 holes, where he can practice a little bit. If he plays a little senior golf out of a cart, that will actually help him in regular events because it gets him competitive without him having to walk. So if let's say he goes and plays a couple of senior events in the spring, he's in a golf cart. Yes, it's senior golf, but he's inside the ropes. The shots matter. He gets nervous. He's trying to beat other guys, but he doesn't have to walk to his ball. He gets 3 days of getting to hit shots inside the ropes in competition under pressure. Then he goes to a major like Augusta, and I think it helps him because he won't have had to go through the wear and tear of walking so much, but he's hit shots. And this is the thing he can't do. Tiger can hit the shots. He just can't get to the ball properly yet. And, you know, way back in the day, you know, Jack had some pretty good majors in his 50s because he'd been playing on the senior tour and winning. And yeah, winning makes you feel better about yourself. It gives you confidence. And so I think Tiger could do the same thing in some smaller fashion.
I was thinking about that too, because I still have to imagine with all of the effort that it is taking for Tiger physically, mentally to prepare for these tournaments and get to a place where he truly feels like he can compete in these tournaments. There has to be some sort of dogged, undying determination and belief that if things break right at some of these courses, particularly Augusta, which if you look at the 2019 playbook of how Tiger won the 2019 Masters, he didn't lead the field in driving distance, right? He actually chipped really well that year. His irons were traditionally very strong as well. But I still feel like if you're Tiger, you have to imagine that if the conditions break right, and like you mentioned, a lot of things have to fall into place. The weather has to be good. He has to get the right side of the draw. Physically, things need to be operating on all cylinders. But that's such a golf course where, I mean, just in terms of the data, the correlation of course history between Augusta like blows every golf course out of the water. It's like almost double what it would be on any PGA Tour course. And the reason for that is it's a course that rewards experience and knowledge so much more than any golf course. Like understanding those greens, understanding where to hit it, understanding where to miss, understanding how to play those holes. And I have to imagine that Tiger still believes that he has such a brain advantage on a lot of the players in the field at Augusta that if he could just get to like 85%, 90% of physically what he should be mentally, and it almost felt that way a little bit watching his 2019 final round, where it felt there was a boogeyman-esque feel to it, where as soon as he started going, people kind of started collapsing all of around him. It just comes down for the walk for me, Bob, because you've been to the Masters a million times. I'm sure I'm going for the first time this year, so I've never actually walked the property. But I don't worry about the mental. I don't worry about the shots. It's just the walk. Can he walk that golf course for 4 days?
Yeah, that's the big question, because I think he can hit the shots, you know, and as we saw, you know, last year he wasn't able to make it through 4 days, and in 2022, when he amazingly came back, he was really struggling on the weekend. I mean, the walking was pronounced, shot 78 twice. You know, he clearly didn't have it. You know, can you get through four rounds? You know, it's not four rounds at the Hero in the Bahamas.
No.
You know, where he got progressively better. But, you know, I think we still are due for one great Tiger moment. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a win, but it could be like Jack did when he was 58 and contended at the Masters. You know, look, Phil had one great more moment at age 50 to win the PGA Championship. If you think about it, Phil hadn't done much before it, and he hasn't done much since. Yes, he had a 65 in the last round of the Masters last year to finish second by four. You know, yeah. And that sort of came out of nowhere, and yet really hasn't done much since. He finally had a very good LIV tournament this past week. It's his best finish on LIV, tied for sixth. But I mean, my point is those moments could still be out there. Mm-hmm. And Tiger is still only 48. His skills have not diminished to the point that suggests he's 48. He's still got a great iron game. His short game, can he get that dialed in? You know, that I think that's a hard thing for him to work on for long periods of time. It hurts his back.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be able to grind out there over short game shots for hours on end. So can he find the right mix to get that ready? Again, you say all that, and then you're going up against these guys who've been practicing and playing, and you know, they're seasoned. They, you know, they start the year gearing up for Augusta. They've played 6-7 tournaments. They practice at home. How much is Tiger practicing at home this week? These are things we don't know.
And it's like whack-a-mole right now with these younger golfers. Like, I feel like for Tiger, every single year, there's a new guy that just pops up where it's like, oh man, now you're telling me I got to deal with this Ludwig guy who hits the ball 330 yards dead straight.
Yeah.
Oh, now Joaquin Niemann is starting to win everything in sight. Like, I just, it's tough. It's tough to see, Bob, because I think the parity in the sport is very high right now. I think the average 25 to 30 year old on the PGA Tour is a lot better than they were even in Tiger's heyday. Like, I think even somebody like Jake Knapp, he could finish dead last at the Masters. Yeah. I it's hard to play well at the Masters in your first appearance. I don't think we've had a debutante since Fuzzy Zeller, but just on paper, like Jake Knapp's skill set for Augusta makes a tremendous amount of success. And, you know, that guy just popped out of nowhere a couple weeks ago.
Right. And that's the thing is it's deeper than it's ever been. I've argued that Tiger faced deeper fields than Jack. Well, you know, they're facing deeper fields now than Tiger faced, even though what Tiger had to deal with was still formidable.
Yeah.
There's guys that can come out of nowhere. There's guys that don't necessarily fear him. They're not used to getting beat by him. You know, when Tiger was beating everybody, that got old. And they got used to that, and it got in their heads a little bit. You know, you felt like you couldn't make mistakes. Now, I don't think they worry about that. I mean, I think if Tiger's in the mix and his name is up there and there's a buzz, yeah, then it gets – but they're not worrying about him, you know, beating them because they've seen all his vulnerabilities over the years. So that makes it that much harder for him.
Okay, final question, then we'll get you out of here. There's probably about 78 players in the Masters field, maybe 85. If I gave you over under 40th place for Tiger Woods right now, 4 weeks out, so makes the cut, but after the cut kind of struggles around the weekend and then, you know, are you taking the over under on 40th at the Masters for Tiger right now?
I'm taking under. If he makes the cut, I'm thinking that he is going to do better than 40th. I mean, it's 50 and ties make the cut. You've not set a hugely high bar there. Would I say top 20? Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd have set it there, but that question might be a lot easier to answer next week if we see him at the Players.
Right.
But look, the little I saw him at Riviera, you know, it does appear that the reason he stopped was not due to anything physical, but due to illness. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you got to sort of give him the benefit of the doubt there, he was on the cut line on Friday. We don't know if he would have made it, but you know, I was following him. He had just pumped his drive into the fairway on the seventh hole, 300 and some yards when he quit. It wasn't like he was limping around out there. He had made a really good par save at the sixth. He did not make a par at the fifth. So he was like a shot outside the cut line. Was he going to make it? I don't know, but he was in position to make it. And so, you know, it's a shame we didn't get more golf out of him to have a better idea, but hopefully he got over that quickly, felt better soon. And maybe the lack of wear and tear that weekend and the lack of stress, you know, will do him some good in some other way.
All right, Bob, this is a blast. The drive coming out March 26, right? You can pre-order it now. Anything else you got to plug? Anything else you got coming out with SI this week?
You know, I'm just doing the usual stuff, you know, writing and reacting to the news in real time. And there's always seems to be a curveball here or there. So who knows what's coming next?
Yeah, I actually... Hopefully I can get you back sometime to do, I'd love to talk to you about how your job has changed since Liv, right? How covering golf has changed in 2024 since, how long have you been doing this?
20 some odd, 25
yeah.
years.
Yeah. Is this the weirdest time to do your job?
No question. Yeah. I mean, I say this in there, but I have not missed a Tiger major win or a Phil major win. It's in the book. I don't know, of all the majors Tiger's played as a pro, I didn't get to all of them when he was an amateur, but as a pro, I might have missed four.
Yeah.
I missed a couple of British Opens early. I missed the COVID year. I didn't go to the US Open. But anyway, yeah, since Tiger, this is the most crazy time in golf. Tiger was its own craziness. And it was, you know, it had its own level of hysteria, but in the last 2+ years, since the whole Liv thing started, there's not been anything like this. And that's why, like, when people question, like, well, why do you cover it? Or why, like, people who hate it, why do you go? Or why do you even write about it? Why do you give them oxygen? Why do you give them oxygen? It's not giving them oxygen. It's like the biggest story in the game.
Yeah.
You know, John Rahm is not playing it. Bay Hill and the Players Championship in the next 2 weeks because he's playing for another league.
Yeah.
You know, and one of their events is opposite it. I mean, how can you ignore it? It's amazing what's going on. Nobody could have predicted this. And we don't know where it's going, frankly. We don't know what the end result will be. And will this division continue? If they do have an agreement, what's that going to mean? How's that going to work? I mean, there's so much more to this to come.
All right. Well, hopefully the first of many, then. There's a ton of other stuff, yeah, I'd love to pick your brain on, but this is a blast, Bob. Thanks for doing it with me, and enjoy Bay Hill this week. We'll do it again soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is it for the podcast. Special thanks to Bob for joining me. Special thanks to Run Pure Sports. Special thanks to BetSperts Golf. You can find more of my work at runpuresports.com. Code Andy for 15% off. On that golf only option. If you want to talk golf with me, read any of my premium articles, ownership, projections, shows, all of my work is available at runpuresports.com. All of my data and tools, my modeling, you can find that over at betspertsgolf.com. If you want to build your own models over there, or just check out my models, betspertsgolf.com, code INSIDEGOLF for 25% off. And we will be back on this podcast feed next week for the Players Championship. Got a lot of fun things planned for the Players. I'm incredibly excited for that event. Can't wait to dive in. So we will be doing a big Sunday morning preview of that on this podcast feed. Until then, enjoy Bay Hill. Best of luck with your bets this weekend, and we will see you next time. Cheers.
If I ventured in the slipstream between the viaducts of your dream, where a mobile steel rims crack and the dead in the back road stop.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.